All right, my name's Eric Sanderson.
Billy McCarthy.
My name is Rob Allen.
And now, see, he was hinting at this, and you're in a band called?
Augustines.
Yes. Can you each give me something from between the lines about this band? That, and by the way, you're entitled to lie. If you want to lie and make up some grandiose, ridiculous story, that's fine too.
Well, I was born a Mormon, and I then moved over.
Me too! So wait, do you wear that special underwear? Oh, that's the girls.
That's the guys, actually.
Is it the guys and the girls?
It goes both ways, yeah.
We consistently have zero space to practice in, so we'll play with at times our instruments touching each other. And you'd think after...
Wait, he's Mormon. Isn't it against the Mormon religion for instruments to touch each other?
It's an offset, like a smaller sect of the Mormon faith that allows touching of instruments.
When we tour around the States, we travel in two separate vans and we have nicknames for them. One is called Vanna White and the other one is called Van Halen. It was Jean-Claude Van Van. Someone then tried to take that away from me because that was my idea. And then they did Van Halen, which was also my idea. And then they went back to, no, then they went to Van Halen. It's now Van Halen.
I know that you named this band because two of the members were born. I'll fill this in so we can get this over with. Because two of the members were born in August. Hunts. And by the way, you know, people would think it's a religious thing, right? The Augustines. The Augustines were Mormons, by the way. And then you had it taken away from you due to various copyright and legal crapola. Yeah. Now, how did it get back?
Well, to be clear, it happened a month before we released the record.
Right.
So we went on the radio and already started promoting the record.
Yeah, you were in trouble, yeah.
Yeah, we were like, whoops. So we just committed ourselves to, no matter how long it took, that we would somehow work something out amicably with that whoever had a problem with it. And we did that. And we just committed ourselves to that. And it took a little bit of time, but I think... people have asked us if we're nuts or whatever, but I don't think anyone cares. They called us Augustines in the first place.
Well, you mean nuts to go back to the other name after you spent so much time was invested in the we are?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that we trust our fans and our fans, you know, we have special fans, and then I don't think they're really going to mind too much. And if they do, maybe, you know, it's not a good fit anyway.
Just post on the million view video and say, new name, and you got a million people.
Yeah.
They get that message, right? Well,
I mean, it happens.
You got a little power here.
Women change their name when they get married, you know?
That's it right there. That's all we need to know. That's it. We can go back to the effing original name because women change their names when they get married. 200 shows in 2.5 years of touring between records. So that kind of drove you to make a record. I mean, when you do 200 shows, did you finally say, you know, we better make a record here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we did 200 shows. We got back. I think we took 3 weeks off. And then we went, when we got this church up in the middle of a very rural, very, very rural area in New York.
Right there. Called Temperamental Recordings.
And we put ourselves up there for a month and hibernated, brought all our gear and sat and wrote a record. And the main reason why we did it so quickly was because of those 200 shows, we had learned and transformed ourselves a lot as people and as musicians. And we wanted to keep the energy of the live show right at the front of the forefront of our experience.
So Geneseo, New York is very interesting because there ain't nothing. What's there? A couple of coffee shops?
Not even, man. Well, yeah. I think there's a nurse, like a community nursing program there. That was kind of...
They're very useful to a band making a new record.
And demoing it. Very useful.
But I think we went out... I know that we worked 5 weeks with one day off, and I also know that we went out one time. We only went out once, so we were...
You just had the food delivered in.
Wow.
Can you get pizza delivered in Geneseo, New York? Like the same old lady shows up, here's your pizza.
No, it's really actually cool that you know, because I think that you have a picture in your mind.
Oh, I did radio when I was in college in Norwich, New York for $2 an hour. I used to travel 60 hours each way. That would be even worse. 60 miles each way in the friggin' snow, because I didn't want to just do college radio. I wanted to do professional radio.
I think we had a nor'easter when we were up there, wasn't it? It was like 3 feet of snow on the ground.
But I ran out of gas driving into town for something, and and I was rescued. It was snowing sideways so badly that the person that rescued me
had huskies.
No, they came, and I thought they were somebody else. It was snowing that hard. I thought I knew them. It was the guy that was at the church with us, It was a girl actually. That's I saw her face. I'm like, oh my God, it's snowing that bad.
One of my favorite things that we do talk about is the producer artist relationship. So this man really knows how to make sound and to make things big. And this is a big, I've cranked it already. This is a big record. So all kidding aside, this is a guy who does know how to collaborate.
We always work hard and we're very productive, but I thought, will he be put off by this or kind of erase the chalkboard on us?
You mean that you came in so prepared?
Yeah, and in fact, he was. I mean, that's the guy's kind of stature. It's his personality. He wasn't intimidated at all. He just thought, well, it's your record, and congratulations for doing such a great job getting it going. Let's make this great.
Well, you know, we came off the road, coming out of Geneseo, and we went into the studio, and we really was looking. We knew what kind of record we wanted to make, and you know, we had the drive and the determination to do that. And luckily enough, Peter could see that in our eyes, could see, you know, we made it very clear, you know, what we wanted to achieve with this record. And he welcomed that. He was like, no problem, you know. He was a very, very strong character, and we had a very good work ethic, and we worked every day very hard for 12 hours a day, and we just cracked on, you know.
But it really is kind of how to move on to the future, but keep the spirit of the past of what you've been doing alive. So there's still a lot of this band. I mean, everybody, well, not everybody knows, but I'll make sure everybody knows that obviously the first iteration was about loss. It was about all sorts of very definitive things, and not necessarily all dark, but definitely, I'll use big words. I'll use a word from the big blog, you know, kind of a catharsis to a great extent. Now you're really rocking out here. This is like, boom, this is coming out there, and it's no messing around, but yet, when your first single is called Cruel City and you move from friggin' Brooklyn and you get the F out of friggin' Brooklyn as a nice Jewish boy from Queens. So you leave Brooklyn, you move to Seattle. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I can speak about this. I mean, you're from New York. Like I actually been looking up the word gentrification. And
yeah, pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it came into its own around the 80s,
right?
The phenomena of it. And it seems, at least in my experience living in different cities, and I noticed that gentrification doesn't go backwards.
Right.
It kind of takes over and it doesn't stop. And I feel that New York's lovely, and God bless the foie gras and the $17 farm-to-table kind of liberal pseudo conscious nanny catalog private school Brooklyn, but I'm kind of, yeah, I said it.
Wow.
And I would say it to anybody's face, like, it's not, you like to leave Brooklyn and walk around saying you're from Brooklyn, bro, but like, come on. All I'm saying is that New York had teeth at one point, and Patti Smith made a really great statement a few years back, just saying, if you're an artist, don't go to New York City, because go to Detroit, go somewhere where you're valued. Because what I see a lot is, I see a lot of sort of elitism, and it's not even on purpose. It's just, you have to make a lot of money to make it happen there. And so people who come from money can handle it there, and people who can't end up in Sunset Park or some other place you wouldn't even want to live, out near the airport or something. Nothing against Bushwick, but that's not cute. Like, I've been mugged. I've had crap happen to me, and it's not charming. Like, I want to live a good life. I've worked really hard for a really long time. So no offense to your New York City or anybody's New York City, but my New York City that I believed in has changed dramatically. And I walk around seeing people with nannies or people that drag their kids into a restaurant when you're trying to have a nice meal. And it's okay to have Michaela and Shiloh and, you know, Trenton and all these little children running amok because these people are in a bubble. No offense.
Even over the past couple of years, everything's changed. in terms of social media. You now have this amazing opportunity, right? You got a million views on a video. But what have you learned from all of that and putting out this new record? Have you, you know, because the music's going to come out there, the music's going to provide, and you've had a modicum of success, but do you ever think about, you know, like, we're putting out this new record and this is really going to take us to the next level, or do you not really care?
Have you seen, is it not Jim Gaffigan? Who did that interview?
Was it, oh.
What's his name?
Yeah, bless the ginger haired dude. Yeah.
Seen his interview or whatever on some late night TV show with Conan, yeah. And he talked about the phone having, you know, like this relationship with the phones that everyone has these days, and how, you know, it's taken away that moment when you are sitting by yourself looking out over something and you start to feel that hollowness inside. And the first thing you do is grab your phone and try to replace it. And like that hollowness is actually really important. And it might sound controversial, but I generally look at social media as in a similar way. I would much more, I get a lot more out of meeting with somebody after a show and having an actual honest to God conversation with them. It doesn't disturb me, but sometimes, much like going to the movie theater, it's like, let's just put the phones down for 1 hour. Like, we don't have to do a photo. We can actually hang out and talk, and maybe I'll remember your name. But if you instantly grab the camera and want to take a picture, that's less time for me to have a conversation with you, and that's less time that I can remember your name. And maybe our lives are a little bit less rich because of it.
That's another aspect of modern life that I notice also in New York. We'll close that chapter, but it's acceptable to pull out and start texting mid-dinner.
Like, don't get me entirely wrong. Like, I still use social media all the time, and I do appreciate interacting with people on the Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. But I think it's just important to say, and maybe everyone already knows it, that it's not replacing actual human interaction. And I think sometimes it feels that way for people because you're so caught up in the moment of like tweeting and all that stuff that like you actually forget that you're like actually in the present. And so it's a balancing act between the two. That said, when we're done with this interview, I might walk out on stage with Frightened Rabbit practicing and take a picture and tweet it. Like, I'm not opposed to it, you know?
But the whole that I'm hearing from this band is we're not having a rock and roll discussion. We're having a things that probably go into the songs and the music discussion. So there's a lot of this. So tell me, I don't want the long form of like every song and what the songs are about. But I would imagine that this album has some meaning. If the first one was about loss and about, you know, reconnoitering life and, you know, figuring out what's coming next, this one sounds like it's where things are at today to a certain extent.
I know. I mean, as per Cruel City, yes, Eric lived in Ghana. I visited Africa this year. We were talking about gentrification and the song's called Cruel City. And the lyrics are, come on, cruel city with money eyes, don't turn away.
Right.
And I hope this is the last time I talk about gentrification this year, because I don't want to talk about it because it's so like right. It's so unfortunate, but it is sad. I am from this area, and I was gentrified out of the Bay Area during the dot-com boom, and then I felt gentrified out of New York. So what is the record about? I cannot tell you. I can only tell you that it's a celebration, and we hope that it's an inclusive experience for the listeners, and we didn't have to hodgepodge a record. We actually worked with a proper producer that is a respectable man, and he taught us quite a bit. I think we gave him a run for his money, and we're actually playing some shows with him this tour. So I can't really tell you what it's about, to be honest.
But it sounds great, and that's all that counts.
Well, I do know that. I mean, as a writer, I've been on the road. I've been home. I've been without, you know, paying rent or whatever for 2 years. I've been traveling quite a bit. So a lot of it is from the perspective of going to the beach and. Not like to, you know, with like sunblock on my nose, like going to a cloudy beach and the coast and kind of sitting with myself and trying to figure out where to go. I went to my grade school teacher's farm and spent some time there, and I went to my elementary school and wrote a bit in my old room where I used to play. So it was a personal record, but I think that those things take a bit of a commitment. You can't just wake up and, you know, write some poignant shit. You have to go out and find it and chase it down. And the band definitely did that by living and being snowed in a church, you know.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between. And I play 40 minutes of solid music,